car enthusiasts and the people who love them.
Hello, this is The Thing About Cars, recording, as always, in Strongbox West in Atlanta. It's a sort of damp and drizzly late fall day out there, but it doesn't stop us from getting together to have a good time. Around the table, we have...
Becca.
Ben.
And I'm Mickey. We have a short list to do today. So on the top of our list is the word eggs. And what do I mean by eggs? I mean, I read something on Reddit one day that says, a fellow wrote, he says, sometimes if I'm hard on my Mazda 6 for a bit, it'll smell like eggs. Does this mean I need new cats? Or is this normal while driving it a little hard? Question mark. So it seems like a pretty obvious answer to this question, but it may not be so obvious. What do you guys think?
Well, I'm assuming he means rotten eggs, too, not like hard-boiled eggs.
he's smelling a scramble with cheese.
my first assumption is the catalytic converters.
Yes.
It's the smell of rotten eggs when one of them is going bad.
Yeah, without more information to go on, that's probably the best assumption.
Time out. Okay, we're rolling. Sorry about that. So the question does seem sort of obvious, but I think that there's a number of answers to it. He says it's a newer Mazda 6. The only time I've ever seen a car in my own garage blowing sulfur was when the new catalytic converter was still being broken in. And I don't know if broken in is the right word to use for a catalytic converter, but once the car was more than a year old, the problem never happened again. This is on mom's car, you know, the one that she doesn't drive too much. It's
It's
the 2001 Infiniti that has 70,000 miles on it right now. So, on the other hand, you know, here we are saying it could be a bad cat when I'm thinking maybe it could just be a new cat. What do you guys think?
Well, I tend to have older cars. I've never had a cat that needed a break-in period, but not
me
having
either.
Experience with newer vehicles, I couldn't comment on all of them.
Right.
I've never had a catalytic converter problem of any kind.
Me either. That's the thing. I mean, I've heard.
I seem to recall back in the 80s when it was a less developed technology, there were a lot of complaints about odors with them.
Right.
There's that annoying meowing sound coming from underneath your car.
Oh, right. Yeah.
But a bump. Sorry.
Yeah. But so the other half of this question is this normal when I'm driving it hard? And I don't think it matters.
Yeah, it shouldn't be happening in any case.
Right.
Well, if there's a true problem, especially on a newer car, there should be a sensor for that.
Right.
So if there's something truly going wrong, even if it hasn't thrown a code yet, the computer might have a background code going on that somebody with one of the very expensive scanners can pick up, or once it's really bad, it's going to throw a code and turn on your check engine light, and then you can scan it with any scanner.
Right.
So as long as there's no codes, I would say it might be okay. I don't know. The old days, you smelled it was bad.
Right.
But,
well, I mean, it's making me think a couple of things. On the one hand is as long as there's no codes, it's fine. But even if you do smell sulfur coming out of your exhaust, that doesn't mean you have to go right out and replace your cats.
I wouldn't say. And plus, there's so many cats. Plus, you've got your downflows. And if you smell the sulfur and assume that you need to go ahead and change it, which one are you going to change without a coat? Are you going to go through and change everything until you stop smelling it? Or I would think it would be... If you're really concerned, have somebody with one of the expensive scanners scan it.
Right.
If there's nothing there, I would say let it be until you know which one's having a problem, if any.
And if he's smelling this from inside the car, I can't help but wonder if there isn't a leak somewhere.
Right.
True. Or, you know, all else fails, if you have an angry ex-girlfriend, check for egg splatter somewhere on your car.
Uh-huh. Right.
I'm just saying.
Is the voice of experience, Becca?
Unfortunately, yes.
Man. Terrible. Okay. So moving to the second item, as this may just turn out to be a very, very short episode. We wrote down amber turn signals. So there's a statistic that someone has done a little research on. They say that cars that have amber turn signals are involved in 28% fewer accidents than cars that have just red turn signals.
You mean the rear turn light? Oh, mm-hmm. I like this topic. I like this topic. Yes, it's a pet peeve of mine when my rear turn signals are red.
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
Just because people fail to pay attention to turn signals bad enough, let alone if they look like the same color as your taillights.
Right.
Yeah.
I like the yellow to go, hey, I'm a new light flashing. Look over here. Hey.
Yeah, no, it's definitely a little more visible. It's a little more distinguishable from the other lights, although it's still not really the ideal color.
What's the ideal color?
Well, this is something that my father studied many years ago. He was a psychologist, and in the 60s and early 70s, he worked at the Highway Safety Research Institute, which is now known as Transportation Research Institute at University of Michigan. And one of the things they did was a study on what colors for the rear lights on cars were the most visible under the greatest, you know, range of conditions, daytime, nighttime, rain, clear, snow, you know, what have you, fog and all that. And they rigged up a car. And, of course, this is back when cars had, you know, pressed metal bumpers that stuck out from the body. They drilled a few holes in the top of the bumper. They took some, you know, like what you'd call a lollipop light or like a trailer light. You know, it's got a screw base on the bottom and a round lens. And they had lenses made up in a whole bunch of different colors. And they'd get their test volunteers, who were just people off the street, to drive a car following the one with these different color lights on its rear end. And they tested it in all these conditions. And what they found was that the best color for the greatest variety of conditions was kind of a blue-green color. It was the most visible all around. And red actually performed fairly poorly.
Yeah, I'm not surprised.
Right. And they wrote up a nice big report about this, detailing all their findings, their methods, and, you know, right, you know, a good scientific report like anybody should write in such circumstances. They sent it to the USDOT, who politely thanked them and filed it away somewhere, never to be seen again.
Well, a lot of places make it illegal to have anything blue on your car simply because of emergency lights like police.
Sure.
Is that one of the reasons they threw it out? Or
I don't think so. My speculation is just not wanting to rock the boat, you know, kind of keep things as they are.
Right. Mm. Well, so the blue light thing, you know, just from a pure scientific point of view, blue hits the eye. I'm using the term incorrectly, so forgive me, listening audience. I know that I'm making a scientific mistake here when I say this, but for lack of a better description, blue affects the eye more than red does, period.
Yeah, and this was a greenish blue, so like a turquoisey green or whatever.
Aqua, you know, whatever you want to call it.
Yeah. Which is why when you're in a dark setting, like say you go to an observatory or you're out stargazing, all of your lights around you, like if you have a flashlight, it should be red. It should illuminate a red light because it won't make your pupil contract as much as a blue light will. And so, you know, to hear that something in the blue wavelengths actually is more noticeable than even a yellow one, that makes a ton of sense.
And back when I was, you know, playing with airplanes, the instrument panel lighting, all the gauge lights and everything in the airplane were red for the same reason.
Right. Yeah. Which is why I changed all the lights out in the Mazda.
Right.
And total tangent here. This is what pisses me off about people who put their phones right above their steering wheel and it's cranked up the maximum brightness even in the middle of the night. It's like, really? You know, can you see anything after you look at your phone? but so going back to the original topic of amber lights being safer on cars, the color difference does make a difference overall. And this might even help the notion that we've ranted about before, where you don't turn on your hazards in the rain. Why? Because red flashing lights can be mistaken for brake lights, and yet maybe a yellow flashing light doesn't. So I don't know if that would help remove all the rage around the people who choose to turn on their flashers when it's raining real hard instead of just pulling over and waiting. Like,
well, that and hazards really indicate that you have broken down, you're disabled in some way, and it might cause people to take an action that they wouldn't. If they think you're broken down, they're going to pull in one direction or the other and may cause a problem.
They think you're stationary, but you're not.
Right, because the intended purpose of the hazard is to say, hey, there's something very wrong here.
Right.
Not just, oh my God, I'm scared.
Yeah.
You know.
So anyway, that was the issue. I think, you know, I want to read the actual journal article a little more detailed, but the pure notion that amber lights are better than just flat red ones just makes a ton of sense to me. I don't know why the American manufacturers in particular don't do this, although Europe is now also churning out cars for the American market that don't have amber on them.
Which is kind of funny because in the old days they always did. In fact, I was in an online discussion just in the last 2 days about this, where somebody had seen an old early 70s VW Super Beetle somewhere and posted a picture, and everybody thought, "Oh, that's a European car. Look at those turn signals."
What?
Like, no, people, my contribution was I used to own a 73 Super Beetle, and it had amber turn signals on the back.
Yeah. But now I've seen Audis with no amber at all in the back.
Actually, shockingly, because it's really a pet peeve of mine. I hate having a car without amber turn signals, just something that's different back there.
Yeah.
My beloved Mustang does not have amber in the rear, and any option that's aftermarket is Euro, what they call the Euro styling, and absolutely not going on my car. And I've even thought about fabricating something to go back there, and I haven't quite dismissed that yet.
Well, what's wrong with the Euro styling as long as it's got the colors you need on it?
Because that's not true to my car. I'm sorry. If somebody wants to do a Euro version of the Mustang, that's their money and their car to deal with, and I will still mock them when they're around.
I have to take issue with this. I mean,
it is not the Mustang styling.
It's not the Mustang styling.
Because I'm more about true to form, not...
Yeah. I was going to say, what do you think about European rock? I mean, we're looking at classic, you know...
Different genre. You're not coming in and telling Def Leppard what they need to play. I'm just saying. See, Leanne's got me saying Def Leppard now.
Yeah.
But, it's a matter of styling. I don't want it on my car. Somebody else can do it. But there are plenty of cars that have gone without it, and I hate it.
Yeah, I think it's just a mistake, and I think it's laziness. I want to say it's corporate laziness.
Probably, yeah.
But
homogenizing, everything in the system.
Right. Yeah. So who do we petition? Who do we yell at to say, please put some amber back on cars, rear taillight clusters?
Well, I can tell you what happened with the Mustang. I don't know about any other car. The one that I have is a 97, and it was when they originally tried to do the... what was is new again kind of thing. It looks nothing like a new age retro style, but that's what they were going for. So the 97 is still what my friend calls the clamshell body style, but the taillights are the 3-bar vertical.
Mm-hmm.
And the Mustangs back in the beginning, early 60s, did not have amber. So I think that's why my Mustang lost the amber that the Fox chassis era had was just because they were trying to do and failing at retro styling.
So if you were to design your own, what would it look like?
Are we talking the whole car or just the taillight?
Just the taillight with amber.
I would still be more true to form. It would still be the vertical 3-bar. I probably wouldn't wrap it around. I understand why some cars wrap around. They think more visibility. I really think it's the people behind me that really need to see it. It would still have that, but I don't know if I would integrate it into one full bar. I've played around with the notion of just having it being some auxiliary light, either below or what have you. I've even played around with having something that outlines the 3 red bars. So I've got a bright yellow on the outside of the 3 red bright. I don't know. I've played around.
You mentioned Raspberry Pi at the very beginning of our...
when we were trying to brainstorm what we were going to talk about.
Because you could use something like an Arduino or whatever to make a little, like Audi. Audi has the red LED that points in that direction and it pulses, right? They don't use the amber anymore, but it's a moving strand.
You wouldn't even need the Raspberry Pi for that. That's not complicated enough to need a microcomputer on it.
No, that's not what I'm saying.
So just LEDs, your fuses, your resistors, and a relay that can, kind of like the turn signal one, causes a flashing as opposed to
a steady. If you build this thing and you get it to manufacturing, I bet there's money to be made there.
I have fabricated so many things that I've never taken to manufacturing. It's just, look what cool thing I did to my car.
Yeah. I've learned of a guy who apparently corrected a Toyota Tundra headlight.
And really?
People got word of what he did to his Toyota Tundra headlights,
mm-hmm.
and he's now doing them full time. He quit his job because he's getting enough business. People are sending them their headlights for him to fix, and he'll cut them up and put them back the way they're supposed to be to perform better. And he's pulling 6 figures a year just because.
Maybe I ought to start publishing some of these things.
I'm telling you, this is the thing. But
interesting, yeah. Interesting, because I'm doing a lot of customization to the Jeep too. Mm-hmm. So, hey.
If the thing is marketable, I mean, that's always the question, right? It's like,
right, sure, yeah. Right. And the problem with the Mustangs of that era, I know there's still a ton of them out there, but not nearly as many.
Yeah.
You know, it's been 20-some years. You get your usual mechanically, yeah. You know, it runs out or it gets wrecked or what have you, and there's fewer and fewer on the road.
This is why we need to take the Thing About Cars podcast and turn it into a TV show, because I think the visuals will add a lot. I think that the audience may appreciate what we have to show them a little more. And there's just tons of stuff to do. I mean,
that's
another topic altogether. We can talk about TV some other time, but yeah.
Well, no, I mean, it's an interesting thing to bring up. Just yeah. So many of us do little projects on the side or.
So anybody listening, if you've got something you want to see us do, let us know.
Yeah, definitely.
Now that we're asking, we could use the ideas. We have a ton of ideas about what we might try to put up on screen, but. And I've been busy trying to meet actual television producers and learn the lay of the land in the city of Atlanta in terms of who can do these kinds of things. So if you can help us out, point us in the right direction. We just want to toss around some ideas and see what sticks to the wall.
Hey, who knows Tyler Perry? He's here in Atlanta.
Well,
is he in the cars is the question.
That's a good question.
Yeah. I've never met him. I wouldn't know him from Adam on the sidewalk. However, I've read that next year his studio is going to be hosting a Concours d'Elegance event.
Yeah, that's right. I've heard that too.
So that should be very exciting.
I wonder if Harry Crix is going to be involved in that one as well. He's the guy who brought the Concours to Chateau Elan.
Ah, interesting.
Anyway, I think that's all we've got on deck for today. Anything else we should touch on before we bid our friends farewell? As always, this is The Thing About Cars. Thank you for listening. Thank you for telling your friends about us. And thank you for giving us your comments, questions, and suggestions. Find us online at thethingaboutcars.com. Find our Patreon at patreon.com/thethingaboutcars. And that's it. We look forward to seeing you next time. See you soon. Be careful out there.
Bye.
Alrighty.
Thank you for listening. This has been The Thing About Cars. We'll see you on the road.